In 1959, John Howard Griffin embarked on what many considered a dangerous, even suicidal mission, to chemically darken his skin and travel through the segregated South as a black man. What drove this white novelist, musicologist, and former French resistance fighter to undertake such a radical transformation? The communication between races had broken down completely. Southern black Americans wouldn't tell whites the truth about their conditions, having learned that honesty made life miserable. Griffin's burning question was simple yet profound. What is discrimination based on skin color truly like? Despite being considered a specialist in race issues, he realized how little he actually knew about the black experience in America. The physical transformation was grueling. A dermatologist prescribed medication normally used for vitiligo patients, combined with ultraviolet treatments that left Griffin constantly nauseated while doctors monitored potential liver damage. After days of treatment and shaving his head, Griffin first confronted his new reflection, a fierce, bald, very dark-skinned stranger staring back from the mirror. "I became two men," he wrote, "the observing one and the one who panicked." That night, stepping into darkness as a black man, Griffin experienced his first taste of what would become a profound journey across America's racial divide, one that would ultimately sell over 10 million copies worldwide and remain required reading decades later. Griffin entered black society through Sterling Williams, a one-legged shoeshine man in New Orleans who taught him expected black behaviors. The transformation was stark. The same drugstore clerk who had warmly served Griffin as a white man now treated him with cold detachment. At Sterling's stand, he observed how whites seeking illicit services treated them as equals, while others looked through them as if invisible. The economic barriers facing black Americans were systemic. Even accomplished college graduates faced severely limited prospects, contrary to white youth who knew education meant opportunity. Griffin spent hours searching for basic necessities whites took for granted, places to eat, drink water, or use restrooms. Drugstores would sell him anything except water, directing him to distant colored cafes. Job hunting revealed blatant discrimination. A plant foreman told Griffin directly, "We're gradually getting you people weeded out from the better jobs. Pretty soon, the only jobs you can get here are ones no white man would have." When questioned about survival, he admitted their goal. "We're going to do our damnedest to drive every one of you out of the state." In Hattiesburg, Mississippi, what appeared to whites as black celebration, the jukeboxes, shouts, constant movement, masked deep despair. Griffin recognized these weren't expressions of joy, but attempts to escape a crushing reality. You are black. You are condemned. White teenagers terrorized black neighborhoods, hurling threats and bottles while seeking confrontation. Black residents maintained blank expressions, knowing any reaction could be dangerous. Griffin visited P.D. East, a white newspaperman whose fair reporting on race cost him everything – subscribers, advertisers, friends. Only two Jewish families maintained contact, understanding persecution firsthand. East's story demonstrated how moral courage often required profound sacrifice. Griffin mastered a technique of alternating between racial identities using specialized skin dyes. Though his mind, education, and character remained unchanged, his treatment shifted dramatically with each transformation of his skin tone. As a white man, he received friendly nods from whites, while black Americans viewed him suspiciously. When black, those same white faces showed contempt or ignored him entirely, while black strangers offered immediate fellowship. These stark reversals, occurring without any change to his fundamental self, exposed the arbitrary nature of racial prejudice. His most profound realization came from comparing black children's limited prospects to his own children's boundless opportunities. watching equally bright, innocent black children being systematically denied the possibilities his children took for granted struck him deeply. This was racism's cruelest aspect, the destruction of potential, the crushing of young dreams, and the psychological toll on children forced to internalize a false sense of inferiority.
In Atlanta, Griffin found hope through the black community's unwavering passive resistance under Martin Luther King Jr.'s Gandhian-inspired leadership. Despite facing jail, humiliation, and threats, they maintained their dignity, frustrating white supremacists who sought violent confrontation. T.M. Alexander, founder of Southeastern Fidelity Fire Insurance, exemplified Atlanta's visionary black leadership. "There is no big me and little you. We must pool all our resources, material and mental, to gain the respect that will enable all of us to walk the streets with the dignity of American citizens." At a Trappist monastery in Conyers, Griffin found peace amid brown-robed monks in quiet contemplation. The guest master monk discussed how racists misused religion, citing Shakespeare about fools finding scripture to justify their errors. He shared Meriton's insight that these people believe in God and yet do not know God, revealing how their false religion, though dressed in Christian terminology, was fundamentally anti-Christian. After concluding his experiment and reclaiming his white identity, Griffin felt profound sadness, as if he were evading his moral duty to witness racial injustices. Flying home to Texas, he struggled between patriotic love and fear for his family's safety. The publication of his Journey into Shame articles in Sepia magazine triggered immediate backlash. His family received death threats, and in April 1960, Griffin was lynched in effigy on Mansfield's Main Street, a dummy painted half black, half white, bearing his name. What hurt most wasn't the act itself, but his neighbors' complete silence. Not one person expressed disapproval of this public threat. Life in Mansfield became unbearable. Griffin faced constant hostility from gas station loafers to teenagers on corners, while longtime friends avoided him in public. The psychological strain eventually forced his parents to flee to Mexico, with Griffin and his family following soon after. Griffin's experiment exposed the absurdity of judging people by skin color. As a white man, he moved freely. As a black man, he faced restrictions based on pigmentation alone. Living with black families quickly dissolved his preconceptions as he witnessed the universal nature of family life through daily routines. Throughout his journey, Griffin encountered profound kindness. In Montgomery, an elderly preacher living in poverty offered to share his modest home without hesitation, maintaining that whites were God's children, just like us, and warning that when we stop loving them, that's when they win. Griffin never claimed to speak for black people, acknowledging that while whites once had to advocate for justice when black voices weren't heard, those days were over. It is absurd for a white man to presume to speak for black people when they have superlative voices of their own. He discovered that blackness was not a color, but a lived experience. While prejudice stems from cultural conditioning, Griffin learned we can break free by confronting it. His journey revealed that the us and them divide is artificial. There's only one human family united by shared experiences of love, suffering, and aspiration.